Hello, folks, and welcome to the Smart Hour. This is your host, Paul Abramson. Thank you for tuning in today. It is Monday, June 18th, 2007. Just a moment, I am typing something. Just a moment here, please. Hold on. Hey, I didn't end last Friday's program with a poem, did I? Somebody asked me what was the poem I was reading. I think they got my program confused with someone else's. Maybe the other Paul Abramson, that evil twin or something like that. Just a moment here. Sorry for the delay. Okay, folks, last Friday, so you're listening to the Smart Hour, S-M-A-R-T. It may not have sounded like that at first. This is your host, Paul Abramson, editor of creationism.org on the Internet. Thank you for tuning in today. SMART stands for Science, Mathematics, and Revealed Truth, and usually we're talking about that the Bible, in other words, part of revealed truth, that the Bible really is true. The beginning of the Bible really is just as true as the rest of the Bible. There is no science that actually stands against the Bible. There is science, falsely so-called, that stands against the Bible, and hey, that's been going on for a long time. 2,000 years ago, actually there was a warning in Scripture not to believe science, falsely so-called. Some people like to call what they believe or what they contend as science to make it inapproachable, or, oh, you can't question that, it's science. Evolution contends to be science, but it isn't. It's not falsifiable, because they're jumping from one thing to another, and they don't care that over 99% of the fossils, at least for humans, show that humans have always been humans. There is less than 1% of the fossils, and each one gets a very special name, and then artists draw it up and stuff like that. And so they got like 40 or 50 odd hominid fossils, human-like fossils. They say, look, we have proof for evolution. But then scientifically people say, wait a minute, no, you have proof for malnutrition. You have proof for inbreeding. You have proof for some kind of other congenital defect. You know, you and I both know that there are people today who have skeletal deformities, right? It's not proof for evolution. There's problems with that individual. When they're ignoring 99% of the fossils, and that's how many, so it's 6,000 to 7,000 is the number of human fossilized remains that have been found, and they ignore over 99% of them, and then they have just a few, and then they take that one fossil, that one odd, slightly deformed or majorly deformed person, and say, oh, this is what this person would have looked like. And then they extrapolate unscientifically and say, maybe, you know, for 10,000 years in every direction, this is what this person looked like, and here's how they went from here to there, and stuff like that. It's all a house of cards. Evolution is not built on anything of substance scientifically. It is a spiritual deception. It is much more theological than it is scientific. Okay? That's what I contend. If you know of someone teaching geology or biology or astronomy and who wants to debate, a public debate, I'd be glad to do that if that would be helpful for folks. All I ask is that we videotape it, and that either side or both sides have the ability to distribute that videotape, because we can show science supports the Bible just fine. Folks, we're probably living, many Christians believe, that we are living in the end times, to the climax of the age. Life started about 6,000 years ago with Adam and Eve. There was a flood about 4,700 years ago. About 4,300 years ago. It's about 1,600 years before the flood. And then the great flood happened. It was remembered by everybody around the world. There are over 200 flood legends that have survived down till modern times. Everybody knew that. Go to creationism.org/flood/, and you'll find a book by Sir George James Frazier, F-R-A-S-I-E-R, I believe is the pronunciation, or the spelling, excuse me, for the last name. Go to creationism.org/flood/, or go to books. Go to the books section and look for the book by Frazier. And you'll see over 200 flood legends that are recorded by people from around the world. Different islands in Indonesia and New Guinea, the Australian Aborigines in China, several places in Africa, Native Europeans, the Gypsies, the Lithuanians, American Indians. There was a painter, Catlin, George Catlin, 1830s, 1840s in America. He traveled all around North Central and South America, visited about 120 different Indian tribes. And one of the things he remarked on the side is that there was not one single tribe in the Americas. We're talking a hemisphere, folks. A hemisphere, 120 Indian tribes. He said there was not one single tribe that didn't remember the flood, the great flood of Noah. everybody remembers. It's the most remembered event in human history. But now we have a foundation building. Rising from the pit is a foundation, a belief in Mythians and Mythians, millions and millions of years. Maybe God got it wrong, the God of the Bible. Maybe he lied to us. He said 6 days. Maybe it was six time periods. Gee, if you can't trust the beginning of the Bible, why trust the rest of the Bible? Maybe it's figurative speech. Maybe it's just allegory. No. For thousands of years, the rabbis and later Christian scholars, if you read Genesis 1 without a preconceived notion, it's saying 6 days. In fact, for each of the 6 days of creation, it says an evening and a morning was the first day. An evening and a morning was the second day. An evening and a morning. An evening and a morning. How many evenings and how many mornings you get per day? Those aren't loose time periods. Evolution is a spiritual deception. Jesus, when he was telling his disciples what to expect at the end when he would come back again, there's three versions of that account in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. Matthew chapter 24, Mark chapter 13, Luke 21. I've never heard a sermon based on this, but it suddenly dawned on me a few weeks ago, and so so I started telling people, hey, wait a minute, what is the very first thing he says? And it's recorded in all three accounts. Take heed that no man deceive you. Take heed that you not be deceived. Take heed that no one deceives you. What does take heed mean? Hey, you be careful. Beware. Watch out. Take heed, and people being deceived at the end times is written in the New Testament about a dozen times. God doesn't stutter. When a command or when a warning is repeated in the Bible, we better listen, because most things are in there only once. And that's in there about a dozen times. Many shall be deceived. You think you're above being deceived? I don't think I am, okay? Have you ever bought a used car? Hello there, son. Oh, I'm glad to see you today. You know, I was going to sell this here car to my best friend, but I don't like him as much as I like you, come to think of it. And I want to make you a special deal. Right? Hey, actually, folks, I don't actually have a car to sell. That was just an example, okay? That was an example that, you know, that trustworthy sounding voice. I'm going to make you a deal that you won't believe. In fact, I won't believe the deal myself. Okay, enough of the used car dealer. I like doing those accents sometimes. Sometimes, maybe if you've listened to the program before, sometimes you've heard me do my Australian accent. And then you thought, wow, did someone from Australia just take over the radio broadcast? Okay, I won't grace you with how wonderful my Australian accent is now, but believe me, you know, people who have heard it before, you know, anyway, so they're just sure that maybe it's not someone from Australia. Okay, so creation evolution, the Bible really is true, but we're living in a time of deception, and many people are falling for this. Smart people, but with a bad foundation. You can be intelligent, but have bad information. What if you made a financial investment based on bad information? You may be a smart person, but the information was bad. It led you to make the wrong decisions. Let's move from the financial to the romantic. Let's say you had a person who you... maybe I don't want to use the example. Romantic. But I mean, a person can feel, oh, I know this person, I know this or that, but you don't know certain things about them. And that changes everything, right? And so information or perceived information can be inaccurate. It can lead a person to make the wrong decisions, whether they intended to, deceive or not. Romance sometimes is, anyway, that's a difficult field. Let's move to something more important. The spiritual. There's nothing more important than the spiritual part of our lives. The physical is temporary, right? Our time here on earth is limited. What's the most important part of life? What kind of car you drive? The house you live in? The house or apartment? Right? The career you have? No. Your spirit. How does God see you? The owner of this planet, the owner of your soul and my soul. Your relationship with God is the most important thing in life, right? Your health, that's not most important. That's important. Family, that's not most important. Your relationship with your maker is what is most important. Okay, who's your closest of kin? God. Our maker, who gave us life, who created us for a purpose. That's what the Bible teaches. And he wants us back into correct communication with him. You know, many religions around the world, Christian missionaries have been learning this for centuries, many religions around the world, they worship, say, animism, or they worship animals, or the spirit of the wind and the sun and the stars, and or unseen spirits. Christians who have done their homework and studied the society, say a missionary goes out there, a missionary team goes out there, who have studied the society and learned what is it they actually believe, what they will find out, almost always, is that these people understand there's a great God behind all these other little gods or local gods who they worship and bow to and try to appease. But that great God is too great. He's too powerful. He's too holy. He's too good. So they worship these other gods instead. If the Christian missionary truly understands Christian doctrine, I would contend that they would say, you're right. He is too great for us to worship directly. You are right. He is too holy. He is too perfect. And we are too bad. We are too sinful. You are right that he's too far from us. But I've come here to bring you the good news that he wants contact with us again. And he loves us so much that he sent his own son onto the earth. And yes, we are bad people. But he has sent his son, and his son paid the price in our place. And all you and I have to do is accept the free gift of his forgiveness in our place, that he was the sacrifice for us. We no longer have to appease these smaller gods, these unseen spirits or these animal spirits or other things in nature. We can worship the true God again through the sacrifice of his son. Now let me lead you in a prayer. There's no magic words in this prayer, but this is true. This is true for people anywhere in the world. You can pray. There's no magic words. Creator, I want you to help me in life, please. I accept the death of your son in my place. I know I'm not good enough to reach you directly. I'm not good enough to pray to you directly, but I accept that your son paid the price for me, and I believe that he conquered death. I believe he rose again. I ask that you accept me into your family. Amen. If you pray this prayer, if someone prays this prayer, then you mean it sincerely, then you've been accepted into God's family, because he will hear you. And what he wants, we need to do, is accept that perfect sacrifice happened. For 4,000 years down through the Old Testament period, we see this at the time of Adam and Eve. We see it at Cain and Abel. We see it at Noah. We see sacrifice. We see it at the time of Moses. And in fact, it was instituted for the nation of Israel, people sacrificing to God, paying homage to God. Job, who was not Jewish, he also made sacrifices. The priests of Midian, it appears they also sacrificed to God. We see that down through the Old Testament times until the perfect sacrifice came, 4,000 years into human history. So we were created 6,000 years ago. And then after about 1,600 years of human history, there was the Great Flood that wiped out everything. It was a global flood. Everyone remembered, as I mentioned, the entire Western Hemisphere, all the Native American Indians, not just the Middle East. It's not like, oh, the Hebrew tradition is a copy of the Epic of Gilgamesh. Wrong answer. I'm sorry. No, that was repeated by people who are hiding from God no matter what. Okay, don't believe those guys. Oh, excuse me. Do your own research. Do your research. This guy Frazier, I put his entire book online. I think it's from 1919 was the book, so it's in public domain. Read what he said. He was a skeptic. He wanted to show the Bible wasn't true. What he wanted to show was, oh, look, the Bible is just composed of legends, just like all these other legends that people around the world have. I want to thank the guy, actually, because he even though he was a skeptic, he wanted to show that the Bible wasn't true. He showed the Bible is true. Okay, folks, we're going into a break. You're listening to the Smart Hour. Please stay tuned after these messages. Hello, folks, and welcome back to the Smart Hour. This is your host, Paul Abramson, editor of creationism.org. I often start out the show by kind of reminding you of some things related to the creation and evolution debate. The Bible really is true. Oh, and the point I wanted to get to, then I'm going to go into the main topic I'd like to discuss today, is that we're reaching towards, it appears, at least most Christians I say would be in consensus on this, or in majority that I know of, we're reaching towards the climax of the age. 6,000 years have passed. We're now about 2,000 years, almost 2,000 years after Christ's death on the cross, the payment for the penalty of sin for all of humanity. At the same time, world populations are surging. We're over the 6 billion mark. It was only about 150 years ago when world populations passed 1 billion. During the time of Christ, 2,000 years ago, just a moment, excuse me, I think it was about between 200 million to 250 million people were on Earth. That's the total number of people all over the Earth, about 200 million to 250 million. I want to mention something on the side here, just to show it in perspective. When the Romans leveled Jerusalem in AD 70-71, and they were going around, Masada happened at that time, horrific things. In Jerusalem, they killed, I think these numbers are correct, about 1 million people. They killed everyone who was there, basically. They wiped out the city. 1 million when the total world population was about 200 million, 250 million. Jerusalem was a major city then as now, and to have wiped out that many people, that changed the future of the world. Well, obviously, particularly for Judaism, people were then, what was left of them, they'd scattered again, sold into slavery yet again. And so many Jewish people out there lost their ancestry, at least as far as they knew at that time. God knows who they are, but it was lost. Now, the Christians at that time, one generation before was when Jesus lived. He died on the cross. It was about 29 A.D., according to the way our calendar is incremented, because Jesus was actually born in about, if I'm correct, about 4 B.C., because when they reckoned the calendar several centuries ago, they were off by a few years. Anyway, so 4 B.C. to about 29 A.D. He was 33 years old when he died on the cross and then rose again and then ascended to heaven. But the... what I want to say is that the Christians knew of the prophecies Jesus had given, the Olivet Discourse, when he said that, you know, when you see the armies compassed about, know that Jerusalem is, let me get that in front of me here so I can, just a moment, let me open a program here. I'm going to open up eSword. Got Bibles on my computer here. Got about, how many do I have? 8 or 10 Bibles here within the computer, within eSword. e-sword.net, and it's free to download. So, compassed ARM armies. I'm going to make a mistake here and add armies compassed and see if I find it sometimes. Ah, there it is. Okay, compassed with armies. Luke 21:20, and when you shall see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that the desolation thereof is nigh. So the Christians read that, the Jews who then believed that, well, Jesus is the Messiah and were missing him, or many Jews are missing their own Messiah, they read and believed, they passed this information on, when you see Jerusalem compassed with armies. And so while the Romans were building their fortifications, I believe it was over the course of half a year or a year, the Christians got out. But most of the Jews who did not believe in Jesus stayed, and then they were wiped out. It was horrible, horrible situation. Anyway, so the Earth's population, about 200 million, is slowly risen. By about mid-19th century, 1 billion, and then several decades later, 2 billion. By the mid, or if 20th century, excuse me, it was up to 3.5 billion, then 4, 4.5, 5. Now we're over 6 billion, and I believe it's 2013 is the year, so about 6 years from now, unless there's some major famine or pestilence or war, some nuclear exchange could happen. Otherwise, the world population will reach 7 billion. That's a tremendous number of people, and most of them then are being deceived into not realizing the Bible is true. The fields are truly white unto harvest, folks. And we need to be doing our jobs, letting people know. Okay, now, last Friday, what I spoke about on the program, which is what I'm going to talk about here for the most part in the rest of this program, was nutrition. I talked about nutrition and toxins. Now, that's a side issue, but I think so many of us are suffering malnutrition or suffering toxic poisoning, even if it's just on the side, and it is detrimentally affecting our ability to think. It is hurting our ability to look at the world, understand what's going on around us. It's kind of like, okay, I'm going to use a car as an example. If you never change the oil in the car, it may last for 30,000 miles, 20 or 30, you're supposed to change it like every 3,000 miles, okay? But it may last 25 or 30,000 miles on that original oil, but by that time, the damage done to the engine, because it's not lubricating as well, it may be the equivalent of 60 to 80,000 miles. It would just be, or maybe the engine may even seize up if all the oil gets burned. So it could be no good at all, right? Well, if you put in low-quality gas, I mean, there have been places, I haven't heard of this recently, but where they put, like, water in the gas and stuff. You ever heard of this? I mean, it's crazy stuff. It can damage the engine. Anyway, low-quality gas would be good. So if you're eating low-quality foods, now what I do, I tend to have a budget, a real budget on meals, but I try to eat a wide variety of things. I'll buy a 10-pound bag of potatoes for $3 rather than the 5-pound bag for $2.50. You get twice as much, and you learn how to cook potatoes. Don't cut all the skin off. You want to keep that skin. Cut the eyes out, cut any bad spots off, slice it up, and either boil or fry or whatever. Potatoes, good food. Onions, brown rice, lentils, split pea, what you do with grains and beans. Many people are losing this. Okay, I'm just going to be brief on this, and this may be funny or humorous for some people, but people aren't cooking with real regular foods. Instead, they're buying partially prepared meals, ones that have had the vitamins taken out and then food additives and salt put in, and they're not eating as healthy as they could. It would actually be cheaper, and it doesn't take that much longer to cook the real foods than to cook the packaged stuff. Anyway, with grains, let's say you had some brown rice. What you do is you put enough in the pan or in a bowl to wash it or something. Then what you do is you rinse it under the tap water. And I'll wash my hands off first, and then you use your hand and swirl it around, rinse it around. And then drain the water off. You do that a couple of times just to rinse the grains off. Okay, rinse it off. And then I put filtered water in it and let that sit overnight or let it sit for a few hours. And it will start expanding. And then it's ready to cook. The Japanese will typically, I lived in Japan for 5 years, so cooking rice is something I know how to do, okay? So the Japanese usually, they have actually special rice cookers and everything, and they do a great job. Because right, you put an exact amount of rice and an exact amount of water, you come back a certain number of minutes later, and man, you got like perfect rice. It's pretty amazing. But you rinse the grain off first, okay? I don't do that. I don't have a special rice cooker, but and then you let it soak with filtered water. Or you can do the same with beans of some kind, navy beans, red beans, garbanzo beans, whatever you buy. Black-eyed peas, man, those are good. Black-eyed peas as part of your meal or something. Okay, so I'm done talking about this. I was talking about nutrition Friday and using spices, like I spent a few minutes talking about curry. How many different spices are in curry powder? And that, you know, we don't know what all the vitamins are that the human body needs. Here's what the experts like to say. Okay, now we know everything. Now we're going to tell you stuff. But let's look at the track record. Every few years they discover some new vitamin or some new class, like flavonoids. You heard about them, flavonoids? Those were like, what, 8 or 10 years ago or something like that, and they didn't even know these existed. So if you're eating prepared foods and then you supplement with vitamins, yeah, you get what I call high-tech malnutrition. You may get an overdose or a plenty of, say, 8 or 10 or 15, maybe 20 nutrients that you need, but there may be 20 or 30 that we haven't discovered yet, at least not directly. And so if you just eat, when you can, real foods, as you can afford it. Now, what I'll do is go to the Chinese market, go to the Asian food market in your town, and I've actually been complimented in mine. I'll tell you this compliment. This is a year or so ago. I was buying all kinds of vegetables, okay, and then a few fish-type products and some of the fish. I don't even know how you say the name in English, but I figured out how to cook them. But I was buying all this stuff, and they told me, there's a Chinese couple that runs it, and they told me, you are like Chinese, or something like that, after I bought all this stuff. But I mean, it was like, if I bought it all at a grocery store, it probably would have been $40 or $50. I bought it at the Chinese market. I'm usually out of there for $10 or $20, and I've got a sack of, you know, couple of sacks of groceries, a lot of food, daikon, which is a long white tubular thing. Man, that has a good taste. In soups, it's a kind of a Japanese horseradish. D-A-I-K-O-N, daikon, and it's actually mild. It's a mild horseradish flavor. What a great flavor. Okay, I'm not done talking about that. I want to talk more about toxins, because you see, we have many toxins in our environment. Now, you've heard the phrase, the straw that broke the, and again, let me back up. I think we're not getting educated on this. If you watch a cooking show, okay, here's my complaint on cooking shows. They focus on the appearance and the taste. The appearance and the taste are irrelevant. It's nutritional value, right? When you boil it down, right? Okay, boil it down, cooking term there. What is the most important part of food? The nutrients. The taste is secondary, right? How it looks on the plate? But you know, if you look at these cooking shows, that their focus is on taste and appearance and consistency and all kinds of other stupid stuff. It's not that stuff's completely unimportant. It's just that if you think logically, that's so much less important than it's like as if the nutritional value is taken for granted. I mentioned last Friday there was a report out of Arizona. I know I can find this because I found it before. Let me look it up here. And it was scurvy. Let me see. Let me type in Arizona. Scurvy. Let me see if I can find it here. I'm not finding it yet here, but I know there's an article online. Gee, scurvy. Okay. I know it's like 6% of Americans have, if you type in Arizona scurvy, boy, you get some good ones here. Anyway, the statistics, this is a report out of, I think, University of Arizona. It was like 10 years ago or so. And that could be wrong, but it was like 6% of Americans are suffering from scurvy, and 16% have mild cases of scurvy. In other words, they're not getting enough live foods. Well, if a person's not getting enough just basic vitamin C, can they think? How good is their decision making? How safe are they driving a car next to you? Right? How good are they going to do in classes or at work? Basic nutrition, we're kind of taking it for granted. That's why I'm focusing on it, okay? Because we're kind of forgetting about it, and then if, like say, you watch these cooking shows or you buy packaged food, oh, I really like the flavor of this. So what? Don't cook that. Actually, one of my recipes I love, I cooked this for the Hovens, the Hoven family. This was half a year ago, and I call it, I was in Pensacola, and I called it spaghetti surprise. It has one strand of spaghetti in it. Everything else is good food. Because if you think about it, okay, you got spaghetti and then you got some kind of sauce, right? And so you got starch. You got starch where the grain has been pulled off, the germ has been pulled off, all your protein is gone from the spaghetti, and then what's in your sauce? Well, it's got tomatoes, that's good, but it may have been cooked to death, right? Anyway, I had everything in it. It was a fun recipe to do for them. I called it spaghetti surprise, and they liked the taste. They said, this is good. And they said, where's the spaghetti? I said, that's part of the surprise. But there is one strand of spaghetti in there somewhere. Okay, let me get back here. Okay, so I want to reference a web page here. I've mentioned this man before. I have no affiliation with him. I've read some of his materials. I have one of his books called 8 Weeks to Optimum Health, I think is the name of it. It's a good book, very interesting. And basic stuff. And Andrew Weil, W-E-I-L. He's not a Christian, as far as I know. But as far as good health advice and good nutritional information and about toxins in our environment, I'll tell you what, he's got some great stuff, some interesting things. Okay, 8 Weeks to Optimum Health is one of his books. I've got it at home. I've read part of it. And it's like a lot of books. I'll read the first couple chapters to get an idea of what's going on. And then I know I have it. I have it for reference, but I never get back to finishing the whole book. But I try and glean from things that way. Anyway, his webpage, if you type in Andrew Weil, W-E-I-L, Andrew Weil, or Dr. Weil, D-O-C-T-O-R, W-E-I-L, you'll find his webpage, okay? And he's got lots of good stuff available. And I just want to mention that, okay, because toxins is part of it. The straw that broke the camel's back, okay, you picture the camel. We tend to think of children's game. But, you know, a camel can only take so much weight. Your body, this biochemical electrical temple that is temporarily hosting your spirit and soul, right? Because that's part of who we are. The physical part of who you are is important. We are told to take care of our bodies, right? Okay, no one's disagreeing with me yet. I know we're going into a break here. But in our modern world, we have so many toxins out there. Well, the body can handle a certain amount until it's like you suddenly realize or it affects other things in life. Have you ever been concentrating on something so much and you don't even realize you have a headache until you stop what it was you were doing because you were so interested in what, let's say you're playing a game or you're doing something. You suddenly realize, wow, that's what a headache. It's like it reaches a threshold. Well, I think that can happen in the body in many ways. If you're fighting histamines, right, and suddenly it catches your attention, or you feel groggy, or you feel like lethargic, you don't have enough energy. Well, maybe your body is fighting things, or you don't have enough nutrients of one kind or another. Maybe you're getting enough vitamins and minerals, but you've got a fat-free diet, so you're getting zero oils. Well, add just a little bit of olive oil. Olive oil, extra virgin, it's usually not expensive if you find it. There's actually cheap brands out there, but the first press and add just a little bit of oil to your diet. Some people, they're trying to lose weight, they cut out all fats. Your body needs just a little bit of oils, and it needs good oils, not bad oils. So you got to put the good stuff in there. So let's see, toxins, lots of information. There's ways to test your drinking water. Here's a webpage here from the CDC, Center for Disease Control. So people in a city, I found this before. I didn't find this today before the program. I was looking for it. They actually have web pages where they'll actually show you, here's your city, oh, here's the contaminants in your city's water. And it will show you, here's the arsenic, here's the lead, here's the organic compounds, da 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 da. And anyway, folks, well, we're going into a break. I'm going to continue on this. I hope this is helpful. Hope it's interesting for you. You're listening to the Smart Hour. This is your host, Paul Aitken. Please stay tuned after these messages. Hello, folks, and welcome back to the Smart Hour. Thank you for tuning in today. This is your host, Paul Abramson, editor of creationism.org. It is Monday, June 18, 2007. I was just trying to find the webpage on testing water purity, and I'm not finding it here. I know I found it before. Let's see. Maybe this is it. Hold on. NRDC. Drinking waters in U.S. cities. You can type in your city, and it will tell you the water in your city. I know I've found it before. Some people drink bottled water. I found an interesting article. I've heard this before. There's actually been specials like on PBS before. Bottled water is sometimes no better than regular tap water because it's regulated differently. It's not the same as city water. And just because it's in a clear kind of bottle, well, what kind of plastic is that? Is there outgassing from the plastic in the bottles? And with little tiny bottles, it's often not as good of a quality of a plastic, and you can actually then be getting a little bit of toxins. So you're drinking bottled water. Okay, good, I'm drinking bottled water. Maybe not so great. Now, I suggested last Friday, as a connoisseur of thrift stores and garage sales, I sometimes will, kind of cruise on in. I'll actually be in another city, and I'll check out the thrift stores if I drive near one to see what they got for me. And one thing you can do is look for a water pitcher that was actually one of those expensive ones with a filter inside. I bought one recently, I think, for $2, and it actually had a filter in it. Those usually go for, like, you'll buy a three-pack for, like, $20, and then the pitcher itself is another $15 or $20. And so for $2, man, hey, you're in good shape. So I will keep a water pitcher in my fridge and then use that water for cooking. So I mentioned earlier, like, let's say, washing grains. So what I'll do is I'll use the regular tap water. Now, let me mention what Dr. Weil says, okay, because I was reading his book, 8 Weeks to Optimum Health, okay? He says, never trust tap water. He has this whole distillation system, and it's kind of expensive, but this whole water distilling thing in his house or something like that. Okay, well, that's good. If someone can afford that, that's a great deal, but at least try and filter the water to get out a certain number of contaminants. And so he says when you first turn on the water in the morning, let it run for a minute or so. I don't remember how long he said, because you want to flush out what's been sitting in the pipes overnight and what may have been added. Let's say if you have copper pipes, well, what is the what's at the joints, or if you even have the PVC, is it possible there could be some leaching of plastic chemicals? Let the water run for a couple minutes at first before you use it for making a coffee or making tea or something like that. Don't just assume that it's completely clean. Let it run and get it going and then use the water. And I hadn't really thought of that before I read that book. I thought, yeah, you know, that makes sense. What, you know, where's the point where it's least, potentially least clean, because the water in the city should have been running a little bit overnight. There are people, you know, who are using the restroom or they're doing other things, and so water in the city pipes is flowing just a little bit. And if I let the water run at least first thing in the morning, then it would be at least better that way for what may have been just sitting in the bottom, but what may leach in from the local pipes. Anyway, so a number of things on that. Okay, water is just one thing. Obviously, things that we breathe in the air is are things. So you can only do so much to try to protect yourself from these things. So what I recommend is, hey, get enough vitamins. Last night I had tea. I had this raspberry tea, which had other things in it, and hibiscus and other stuff, along with a tea packet called Detox, D-E-T-O-X. It's got all kinds of herbs in it. Okay, well, and then I put some honey in it also, and I just had that as part of, you know, after dinner last evening. And so I don't know if that helped or not, but if it's got several herbs in the Detox tea, then if I drink that, say, once a month or something like that, maybe that will help. Just a little bit. That's the idea. Okay, environmental toxins, all kinds of stuff. I found one page here that said something like 70,000. Okay, this is on about.com. 70,000 synthetic chemicals are used commercially, and approximately 1,000 more new chemicals are introduced into our environment each year. I recently noticed on a couple of packages, they had food preservatives, and it was one of the food preservatives was titanium dioxide. And I didn't eat it. It was like some granola kind of pack. So you'd think, oh, this is a health food kind of thing. No, I read the ingredients, and it had titanium dioxide. Well, maybe that's fine for the body. On the other hand, since titanium dioxide does not grow naturally within any plants, it sure sounds to me like a heavy metal. It sounds to me like, man, that could do nerve I don't know. You know what I mean? Some of the things that are in our environment, some of the inoculations, I'll tell you one place you'd go, Mary Toko, T-O-C-C-O, I think that's her webpage, about vaccinations, inoculations for your kids, because some of them have mercury. Let me look this up here, M-A-R-Y-T-O-C-C-O, let me see if I can find her real quick. That's her, okay, her webpage. Excellent video, M-A-R-Y-T-O-C-C-O, her webpage, are vaccines safe? Now, in many states, the vaccines are mandatory. You can't take your child to daycare or to school or anything if you have, they haven't been vaccinated. Of course, one could say, well, wait a minute, if the vaccines are, you know, work, then, and your child doesn't have the vaccine, how does that endanger the other kids, right? So why on earth should it be mandatory? She claims, I don't want to put words in her mouth, but is when on my recollection of listening to her video, watching her video several months ago, is that there appears to be a link between autism and these vaccines. Some of these vaccines have mercury in them. Some of them have dead, they have placental tissue or dead animal tissue or other things within the vaccines. This is then being injected into the small child or the baby, bypassing their normal defenses. I wouldn't be surprised if there wasn't something really horrific about some of the vaccines. Anyway, M-A-R-Y-T-O-C-C-O, Mary Toko, T-O-C-C-O. She's got an interesting thing here. Soaps, let's see, all kinds of stuff. Glues, coatings on the furniture, plastic cases on electronics, all kinds of things here. Synthetics here, 70,000. So we can't do anything about most of these. How did I get to this webpage? We can't do anything about most of these things that are out there. But what we can do is, look, you know, you don't want to go overboard, okay? For example, I was talking, I should do a show and talk about EMPs sometime, electromagnetic pulse, because that's a real danger to America. Maybe I'll try and do that later this week sometime. But it's like nobody's talking about it in the media. How can they not be talking about it? This is a technology that exists, and it appears that Iran is trying to figure out how to do this, how to make an EMP weapon, electromagnetic pulse, EMP. Also type in the word, what is the word, something effect, Compton, the Compton effect, Compton effect. Hold on just a moment here. Had some clicking on the line there. That was odd. Maybe we're being monitored here. We don't want people to know about this danger. You talk a little bit too much there, funny fellow. Anyway, so that wasn't the Australian accent, by the way. That was a different accent. Okay, see if you can figure it out. Anyway, so I'll talk about that sometime, EMP, the electromagnetic pulse. But so many things. So you don't want to, like, there was one man I was talking with, this group. Actually, there were some very educated people who I was with, and this man talked about this particular military organization he was with, and they bought all the crystals for a radio, for making radios at this particular city. And I'm like, well, maybe you don't need to buy every one of them. You don't want to go overboard. And then he was saying, well, if you start, you know, preparing for this, maybe it's because you think it will happen, that will make it more likely. And I'm like, well, you know, I've never had a car accident, but I still have car insurance. My intent is not to make an accident more likely. It's, you know, what's a reasonable level of defense? What's a reasonable level of thing that I can do that then doesn't overwhelm me, but that then, okay, I'm protected. And so that's what I'm recommending to folks who are listening to the show in a nutritional way and in handling toxins. If you go to that Chinese market and get some shiitake mushrooms, S-H-I-I-T-A-K-E, shiitake mushrooms, there will be about 3 or 4 different brands. Some of them will be only in Chinese or only in Japanese. So you may have to ask, excuse me, where are the mushrooms at? Okay, and then, you know, don't say it like this. Don't pretend you're from California. Wow, man. Wow, where are the mushrooms at, man? Okay, don't do that, okay? Just go. No, you want mushrooms for cooking. Shiitake mushrooms are good ones, okay? And get some seaweed. Seaweed has incredible numbers of minerals in it because it's in the ocean, floating in the ocean, and she'll get just a little bit of all kinds of it, and it's cheap. You can buy enough for months and months worth of supply of seaweed for like $3 or $5. Buy some curry powder, like I mentioned. Get a little bit of red pepper, vitamin C, cayenne pepper or red pepper that's got some vitamin C in it, depending on how it's been prepared. If you get Italian seasoning, that's got like 3 or 4 seasonings within it. A little bit of marjoram and thyme and so you don't have to get that many seasonings to potentially help your body, and you don't even have to put in enough that you can taste it. Just put in enough that maybe if your body needs that, you will have it. Almonds and walnuts. Almonds, walnuts, you don't want the ones that have been cooked to death and then salted, heavily salted. That's probably not very good for you, but if you can get some that aren't too badly cooked. Hey, almonds have got great oils in them. Anyway, there's lots of things to talk about here. I know I'm rambling here in a way, but I guess some things that I've learned over time and then I've adopted into my life because I will eat junk food, okay? Last evening I was eating salsa and chips, okay? I will eat junk food, but I also mentioned I had the detox tea. Okay, so it's like my theory on this, generally speaking, is I can pretty much eat what I want, but if I give the body enough tools to combat the bad stuff, if it gets enough good stuff to combat the bad stuff, then I can pretty much kind of eat normally. I also mentioned last Friday one of the things that encouraged me to do a program in nutrition is there was this young man, and he couldn't have been 30 years old, maybe 25 to 30. I was in a particular electronics store last Friday, and he was talking about his knee bothering him. And so he said, I don't know why he asked me. I don't think that I look like, if you saw me on the street, I don't think I look like, you know, that guy might know something. I don't think I look that way. If you knew me personally, you'd go, I don't think that guy knows that much. Okay, you'd probably say whatever you'd say if you just saw me walking down the street. But the guy says, have you ever had problems with your knee or your knee swelling up or feeling odd? And I told him that if I eat too much prepared food, like particularly meats, you know, packaged meat that's got the preservatives in it, then that will affect me negatively. I've noticed that in the past. And so I actually consciously cut down on it or try to not get that meat. Sometimes I will because it's so much cheaper. And so I'll get something on sale or it's about to expire at the store, so it's a half price or something like that. But I don't want to eat it more than a couple times a week or it will affect me. So the body can, it can battle. The straw that broke the camel's back. The body can battle a certain number of histamines. The body can battle a certain number of, you know, whatever these toxins, titanium dioxide or sodium dioxide or potassium, whatever, you know, these different preservatives that are out there that are not natural, that are not part of the food. The word preservative sounds good, but what actually is it? It inhibits other life forms from eating the food before we do. Now, we are bigger, we're able to overcome it, but it still affects us in a small way, right? maybe more than in a small way. There's a little bit of a battle going. It's got to deal with every molecule you put in your mouth, every molecule of air you breathe, right? The firefighters from the World Trade Center, in the World Trade Center on 9/11, there was actually a certain amount of asbestos in the first 42 floors of the World Trade Center. The first 42 floors had asbestos. It was 1970 in New York when they changed the rules, and they said, wait a minute, this stuff is dangerous, and they changed to fiberglass. Well, that huge cloud, remember the people running? Well, some of that was asbestos fumes that they were breathing. Well, firefighters are exposed to that. So their bodies, you know, a person's body can battle a certain amount of whatever it is. If it's x-rays, like an x-ray technician, right? That's the reason they run and stand behind a screen, and you're sitting there, and they go, okay, I'm turning it on. Okay, we're all done. Oh, it's completely safe. There's nothing to worry about. It's just that I'm going to run back over here and hide while that's going on. Folks, I hope that today's show was interesting. Tomorrow we'll talk about something completely different, maybe EMPs. That might be a fun one. God bless you, and hope you'll tune in tomorrow.